Radio Prague News.
The Czech Prime Minister says Visegrad 4 countries are offering more aid for Africa. Police face a major shake-up at the top, and unrest at a Prague detention centre continues. The Visegrad 4 group of Central European countries comprising the Czech Republic, Slovakia, Hungary and Poland will collectively boost its aid to Africa by €400,000 or around 11 million crowns. Czech Prime Minister Bohuslav Sobotka announced on Thursday. The four countries will also earmark 300 more people to help in the European institutions dealing with the asylum policy and border protection. Sobotka, who is also representing Poland's interests at the EU summit in Valletta, Malta, during its political changeover, met with his Slovak and Hungarian counterparts in the margins of the meeting. The Czech Republic was originally earmarked to provide €600,000 for the new EU fund to help development in African countries likely to be the source of emigrants. Czech police are facing a major shake-up with the new heads of the Prague, South Bohemia, Pilsen and Olomouc regions needing to be selected. Some of the changes were already scheduled, but some of them have been fast-forwarded because of the so-called Vidcon scandal in Olomouc, where police are alleged to have closed their eyes to major cases of corruption. A similar clean-out of regional police heads was undertaken by Police President Tomáš Tuhý in April. Two refugees at a detention centre in Drahonice in northwestern Bohemia injured themselves and one tried to attack a guard on Wednesday, the spokeswoman for the foreign police, Katarina Rendlova, told the Czech news agency. One of the men had to be taken to hospital. More than 40 detainees, most of whom are from Iran, launched protests on Tuesday evening over the fact they were allegedly being treated like prisoners and because they feared being deported to their country of origin. A decision over the host country for the next European Games in 2019 was due to be decided at a meeting in Prague next week, but has now been taken off the programme. The venue for the Games, which were held first in Baku this year, was to be discussed at a meeting of the European Olympic Committee at the end of the week. The front-running candidate, a bid by the Russian cities of Kazan and Sochi, had been put into question by the ongoing Russian sports doping scandal. Minister of Finance Andrei Babiš said Thursday that his ministry can now arrange for the clear-up of long-running environmental problems in the country for around half the costs of a tender run by the previous centre-right coalition government. Babiš said the clean-up should cost between 25 and 30 billion crowns, compared with the 57 billion offered to undertake the work under the previous government headed by former Prime Minister Petr Čas. The clean-up should cover chemicals at the Neratovice site in central Bohemia, the famous oil and chemical lagoon in Ostrava, and other environmental damage centred around Ústí nad Labem. The two-day Prague European Summit begins on Thursday in the Czech capital. This session of strategic thinking about European issues is likely to be focused, at least in part, on the current immigration crisis, situation in Ukraine and threat from terrorism. More than 100 representatives from other EU countries and European institutions are expected to take part, with the key speaker on Friday being the Vice President of the European Commission, Frans Timmermans. I'm Chris Johnston, and that was the news.
You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Ruth Franková. Coming up in today's programme, we look at the situation at Drahonice detention centre where refugees went on hunger strike. And can Czech women beat Russia again and win the Fed Cup? Later on in Panorama, it's back to the Cold War via a new documentary about Karel Kecher, the only communist spy to infiltrate the CIA. All that coming up, so please stay with us. The situation at the Drahonice detention centre for migrants, where a refugee protest reached a head on Wednesday, is gradually calming down. However, several dozen migrants remain on hunger strike in protest of their lengthy detention, and the authorities are on alert for further possible problems. Daniela Lazarová has more.
The Drahonice detention centre for men was on its feet on Wednesday night as close to the 100 refugees housed there gave vent to their anger at being held captive and their desperation desperation over not understanding what was happening to them. Tensions rose after 40 people were transported out of the centre overnight, triggering fears among those who remained that they would be sent back to their home countries. Over 60 people went on hunger strike and three others harmed themselves, smashing glass to be able to slash their wrists. One refugee attacked a guard and smashed through a glass pane in protest at being held captive. Police and paramedics were called in to help deal with the crisis, while aid workers were ordered out of the facility. The head of the Organization for Aid to Refugees, Martin Rozumek, says that by Thursday morning, his workers were able to return.
You know, the situation yesterday was full of tension, so I understand that the ministry did not want to allow aid workers to come yesterday. But we called the ministry in the morning whether we can access the center today, and they confirmed that it's possible. So today we have two lawyers there available for refugees to explain the situation, appeal the decision.
While the Drahonice crisis appears to have been brought under control, aid workers helping in the facility say this is not likely to be the end of it. Those still on hunger strike are protesting against lengthy detentions lasting for several months, which is something that has triggered strong, though less violent, protests in other facilities around the country. Although the detentions are in line with Czech law, Martin Rozumek says the government should rethink its policy or be prepared for ongoing problems.
I think it's fundamentally wrong because we are detaining people for the purpose of deportation that never takes place or that almost never takes place to the home countries. And the people do not know about it. So they should be much better informed, and the policy of widespread detention of people from countries producing refugees like Iraq, Afghanistan should be stopped.
This is not likely to happen. Interior Minister Milan Chovanec defended the Czech policy line before the Senate on Wednesday, saying the country would continue to adhere to Czech and European law in this crisis and that the hunger strike would not change anything in this respect. While the majority of the Czech population back the government's line, NGOs and human rights initiatives on Thursday held an open-air meeting in Prague in support of a more benevolent policy.
Daniela Lazarová with that story. Now, the Czech Republic's women's tennis team are looking to end the season on a high in Prague this weekend, when Petra Kvitová and co. hope to lift their fourth Fed Cup title in 5 years. Meanwhile, the presence of superstar Maria Sharapova has increased interest in their opponents, Russia. Ian Willoughby has the details.
The Czech women's tennis team have enjoyed unrivaled success in recent years, with Petra Kvitová and co. lifting the Fed Cup title in 3 out of the last 4 years. This weekend, they're hoping to make it 4 out of 5. The defending champions are currently preparing to take on Russia in the final and go into the tie as favourites. The venue has proven lucky for the Czechs in the past. They beat Serbia at Prague's O2 Arena in 2012 and Germany there last year. Lucia Šafářová was part of the team that lifted the Fed Cup twice at the O2. Speaking there, the 28-year-old told Czech television she had fond memories of the place.
When I enter, I have nothing but positive, beautiful feelings. What comes to mind are the moments after we lifted the title, especially the win over Serbia. I always remember that when I come here. What makes this place special is the home environment, the home fans, when they really fill the place. You feel the support here, and that really drives you forward.
Last November, Karolina Plíšková was the Czech Republic's first substitute. However, she's come a long way since then, establishing herself this season as a regular member of the 4-member team and reaching no fewer than 5 WTA finals. Plíšková, who made her first appearance in the competition against Canada in February, says the Fed Cup is a whole other ball game.
It's completely different than what we are used to. All year you play for yourself, but here you play for the Czech Republic and the whole team. We are usually alone, but with the Fed Cup we can be with the team for 3 or 4 weeks of the year. I really enjoy it. I've only played in Canada, so we'll see what happens. It would be a bit harder in front of the home crowd, but I'm sure I could handle it.
Opponents Russia will be hoping to avenge the 2011 final, when the Czech Republic beat them on their own turf in Moscow. The two teams haven't met in the competition since. Fans and photographers are in for a treat, as Maria Sharapova is making a rare appearance for the Russian team. The megastar has positive win records against both Kvitova and Shafatova, but she has lost to both of them in the course of this year, 2015.
Ian Willoughby with that report. Just a reminder that you are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. One of the hottest tickets at this year's Jihlava International Documentary Film Festival was main competition film Rino, a fascinating portrait of the only communist mole known to have infiltrated the CIA, Czechoslovakia's Karel Kecher. Director Jakub Wagner interviewed numerous former US agents and other officials for the film, but it is the charismatic and elusive Kecher who steals the show. Ian Willoughby reports on Rino for this week's edition of Panorama.
Berlin, Agentura ADN.
A reading from a communist-era news report on an event that's today highly evocative of the Cold War era. An exchange of prisoners between East and West at Berlin's snow-coloured Gleinicke Bridge in February 1986. Among the nine crossing to the eastern side of the dividing line between the two worlds was Karel Kecher, the only communist spy known to have infiltrated the CIA. Kecher, who is today an extremely spry and forceful 81-year-old, agreed to be interviewed for Jakub Wagner's new documentary Rino, the title referring to one of the mole's many code names. Making the film was a lengthy process, in part because the director needed to win over the largely reclusive Kecher.
I established credit with him on the basis of my former films, for the most part portraits. I guess I also want some credit for my great interest in his story, as well as my ability to get to grips analytically with his declassified secret police files issued by the Institute for the Study of Totalitarian Regimes. In the end, he suggested we address each other informally, and in our own way we actually had a very friendly relationship.
One of the challenges faced by Wagner and his team on Rino was that, wholly unsurprisingly, much is still unknown about Karel Kecher's actions, and will no doubt remain so. It's a murky, convoluted story. What's more, though Rino makes no claims to be gospel, the viewer is occasionally left uncertain as to which of the interviewees, many American and therefore naturally ill-disposed toward the protagonist, to trust. But there's no denying the number and quality of interviews with now retired Cold Warriors and other officials.
We found those people with the help of the journalist and writer Vladimir Shevela. He wrote a book about Kecher and had most of the contacts. So we used him as a co-author of our film in looking for American interviewees. We really found a lot of people, at least those who remain alive and were willing to speak. Former agents of the CIA and the FBI, people from the Justice Department, and the lawyers who represent it.
Some of the US talking heads in Rino are dismissive of Kecher's significance as a mole. Jakub Wagner says that it's hard to counter their assertions, given the dearth of information on his activities.
They call him a second-rate spy. We can't judge. It's hard to create a league table of spies, though of course the first would be Aldrich Ames, who spied for Russia. We don't know the nature of the information he leaked, and we probably never will. It's either in the former USSR or only known to the CIA or the FBI, who arrested and questioned him. The Americans say he was second-rate, but they also say it was a unique infiltration, so we can only speculate about what's true. I personally don't think he was such a second-rate spy.
So what do we know for sure about Karel Kecher? He joined the Czechoslovak Intelligence Service in 1962. 3 years later, he emigrated to the US, where he gained a doctorate at Columbia University and eventually became an American citizen. After some years as a sleeper agent, he was hired as a translator and analyst by the CIA, where he had access to classified information that he handed over to Soviet agents. He's believed to have betrayed Alexander Ogorodnik, a Russian diplomat who spied for the CIA. In Reno, we learn that he was accused of being a double agent by the KGB's head of counterintelligence in 1975, when he was effectively cut loose. He left the CIA for a job in academia. However, by the end of the 1970s, he was rehabilitated by the KGB and returned to work part-time at the CIA. He was eventually uncovered with the arrest of Kicher and his glamorous wife Hannah, becoming a big international news story. Incidentally, in the US, they called him Karel Kocher. However, it has never been revealed how the Americans discovered that he was a mole. After being handed over as part of a prisoner exchange in Berlin, he returned to Czechoslovakia. There, incidentally, he worked at the same Prognostics Institute as future presidents Václav Klaus and Miloš Zeman. In Reno, Karel Kicher comes across as a charismatic, strong-willed, intelligent and vain man. After spending a lot of time in his company, how would director Jakub Wagner characterize his protagonist?
I know him well and for a long time, and actually not at all. I thought in the process of making the film we would get to know each other better. I thought he wouldn't be still shrouded in espionage, but I have a feeling that he is. I've known him for a long time, and paradoxically, the longer I've known him, the less I've known him, to the point of almost not at all. But as a character, all I can say is he's a very strong person, and a very complicated person, incredibly complicated for me.
Off camera, but also still close to center stage in the film, is Kicker's beautiful and evidently charming wife, Hannah. She's been with the former spy for over four decades, and the two come across as a formidable partnership. How much Kicherova was involved in Kicker's activities never becomes clear, but at least one of the US interviewees insists that she was the real brains of the operation.
I would describe her as very attractive. Today, she's a real lady. Very impressive. She did receive training in uncovering surveillance. That's spoken about openly in the film. I think she, too, became a strong personality over the years. For instance, in New York, she was the only non-Jew to become a director of One Diamond Dealers. So perhaps she did become interesting to the spy masters. But she refused to be in the film. She doesn't want to appear in the media at all or to be discussed in connection with his spying career.
Karel Kicher was billed as a guest for a Q&A after the premiere screening at the Jihlava Festival and was sat in the front row throughout the film. But when it came time for the discussion, the 81-year-old immediately got up and left, much to the consternation of the organisers. The documentary is evidently not completely to the liking of its subject.
He had very many reservations over facts, over the interpretation of facts. He had the most problems with private matters that he wanted to have at least partly limited or toned down, and we've been able to accommodate him. Other issues are still up for discussion, but what he really wants is that the film provide more factual proof of his innocence or guilt.
The version of Reno screened at Jihlava was not the definitive version, with its makers still needing to dot the I's on contracts with the owners of the rights of some of the footage included. But given Karel Kicker's international notoriety, Jakub Wagner is confident that when completed, it can eventually win viewers beyond the Czech Republic's borders.
Outside the Czech Republic, in Europe or America, I think the film can be attractive, and maybe even a lot more attractive. Abroad, it won't be overshadowed by the local problem of information that's sensitive for the actors, who have a lot of enemies here. I think it's really an attractive story of a spy, or perhaps two spies, who for 20 years lived in a hostile environment, and nobody knew they were a hostile element in the greatest period of the Cold War.
That was director Jakub Wagner ending that edition of Panorama by Ian Willoughby. And that brings us to the end of our English language broadcast. If you have any comments about today's program, then please send them to us. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or on Facebook and Twitter. We'll be glad to hear from you. But that's all for now from me, Ruth Franjková. Thank you very much for joining us and goodbye.